Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chai Chat. This is our second Love Month show and a very, very special show. You'll see in a minute we come to you from Columbus, Ohio, and today also from the West Coast. So we will tell you a little bit more about our lineup here in a minute. But Mary, I wanted to say hi to everyone and welcome you on the line too. My co-host Mary Rockenstein.
Hey, Victoria. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. It's a beautiful day here in Columbus, and so we're going to have a beautiful show for you guys, too. I hope you remember that our home play from last show was the idea of, hey, what would it be like to go through a day focused on cooperation, collaboration, and more love-based kinds of themes rather than fear-based kinds of themes. I hope you guys played with that a little bit between last show and this show because it's a really interesting exercise, and it really does some amazing things to shift your day and to shift your approach to how you create your day. So I hope you played with that. And we also put forth the idea in our last show that our world's evolving beyond this really heavily competitive state into more of an era of cooperation and collaboration. In fact, we did propose that our very survival depends on playing well with one another. And we want to tell you that this includes playing well within our own team. And to that note, one writer, speaker, author, thinker is Tim Sanders, who introduced in 2002 the radical perspective that instead of competing, we need to share the love. His book, Love is the Killer App, and hopefully all of you have had a chance to take a look at that at some point in your career, and if not, you must get this book. It appeared at the cusp of a shift in thinking about business as usual, and his book ushered in a fresh perspective in the business world. And fast forward to today, which is a very exciting day because we welcomed him to the show, and he is today releasing his newest work called Deal Storming. And we are very, very excited that he's with us today. And this man walks his talk because in the midst of a huge frenzy of book release excitement, he is sharing his time with us today. So without further ado, I would like to bring on with us Tim. Tim, welcome to our show today.
Well, my pleasure to be with you.
We're so excited for you. Tell us about Deal Storming.
So Deal Storming is a book about how to use teamwork to solve really big sales challenges in your life, whether you're trying to close a deal, raise some money for your company, save your biggest account. These are all huge challenges in the world we live in today that require creativity and innovation. And what I've learned is that innovation is a team sport. And over 15 years, I've figured out how a big company or even a small firm can build what I call a deal storm team around a problem, across departments, using customer champions, and solve it 70% of the time, 25% faster. That's what the book's about.
Wow.
Tim, those are
some great stats, yeah.
Yeah, they are. And it sounds like such a, when I say simple, a simple concept, like why wouldn't people be doing that? So what gets in the way? What causes people not to do that, to aspire to teamwork, to solve business challenges?
Well, you appreciate this. Fear gets in the way. That's exactly what the problem is, right? So think about it from all sides. So the salesperson or the account executive or the entrepreneur, they want to control the process. So to bring people in from marketing, accounting, finance, or the delivery team, the services team, that gives them all a voice at the table, and sometimes that's really hard to do. Like, collaboration is very scary because it leads to consensus building and a sense of democracy. So they have to kind of let go of that. And they have to trust the fact that, you know, 20% of nothing is what? Nothing. So it's better to take a chance and cede a little bit of control than to lose. And then for people in other departments, the challenge is, why do I care about the money you're trying to make, right? So if I was at a little startup where we all had stock options and we were just trying to get to the next paycheck, well, that's a different story. But at most companies, operations and engineering and all the people you need to be on your team, they're just not motivated by money. So the trick there is to create a cause, a bigger cause than just making money, whether it's beating the competition, improving your reputation in the market, instilling that pride that's within your culture, whatever it is. People that put these deal storms together have to be really good recruiters. And to quote Simon Sinek, they have to start with the why. But when you solve those problems and you create a team around a challenge and win, it changes the culture of your entire company. Because
wow.
Culture is a conversation, you know. It's led by leaders, and it's punctuated by success or fail stories about how we do things here. So I've seen companies, again, even small four-person architectural firms, and they go out and do one of these deal storms, and they close the deal, and now everything they do is collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's how they design products, how they go to market with their services, everything now is a collaborative event because they realize something. The only people smarter than any of us is all of us.
Yeah.
And that when
yeah.
we know everything, anything's possible, right? So they figure that out by a visceral experience that you can count with dollars and cents called a sale, and it changes the entire company and the way people think about it. Because a lot of this book is about collaboration, the spirit of collaboration, which I think a lot of your listeners can put to work in solving any challenge that they face in their life.
Yeah, yeah. Tim, if a company right now is not adhering to these principles of collaboration because they have a dysfunctional culture, or the culture is kind of like, we say this, but this is not really what's being led by the leaders, what's the transformation process look like to get from dysfunction to deal storming?
I think it becomes a conversation around a crisis. I mean, nothing promotes change more than a poke with a sharp stick, right? So I think that we've got to find one make-or-break moment that everyone's willing to put down their guard over and let that moment be the crucible moment for collaboration. And what's interesting about this is that, not to get wonky on etymology, which I'm Sheldon Big Bang Theory about the history of words, but collaboration's roots go back to a phrase, to confer with the enemy. See, collaboration originally was when the dissident and the insurgent shared inside information to overthrow the king. This all goes back to Europe. It all goes back to centuries ago. So collaboration was this subversive thing where both sides revealed secrets which gave them a strategic advantage against an objective. So it is no wonder that today all of us have a natural resistance to the concept of across-the-lines collaboration. We collaborate within our silos and within our little small groups because we trust each other. But outside of the lines, you know, often I find people, they look at other parts of their company as the land of no, right? The only time they interact with them is when they say no. Or they look at other parts of their company as the world of slow. Every time they work with them, everything takes months and months. So, you know, to create that trust is the key. But I think, again, if you start with a really important challenge, I think you can change everything.
Wow.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, so the biggest point of struggle becomes then the point where you can break through the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is really about, you know, sort of about the concept of gestalt. You know, I mean, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And for people to really sort of realize that as an opportunity, you know, to shift the whole approach of the organization and see that it works. It's sort of like magic. Wow, who'd have thought?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, you know, all innovation is about noticing patterns, connecting the dots, and combining ideas, right? So
yeah.
There's a really good book on just creativity. And it's called Where Good Ideas Come From by Steven Johnson. You might have seen him on PBS or heard him on NPR. Really, really smart guy. And he studied his whole life. He studied where innovations really occur. And one of the cool conclusions he comes to is that fundamentally the secret to good ideas is to have a lot of ingredients on the shelf and know those ingredients and be willing to spot the possible unexpected connections between those ingredients. And when I read that, I was like, you know, you're right. Every invention in history involves two or more ingredients or elements. Otherwise, we just call it a discovery, like electricity. Every single invention is a combination of multiple ingredients. So if that is true, then everything in our life that we have to be innovative to solve requires more ingredients, which means we need more information, and we need it from different sides.
Yeah.
And one of the exercises I like to do, inspired by TED Talks, when I'm giving a keynote, is I like to show people the difference between a single point-of-sight telescope. It's got a very narrow aperture, but it goes a long ways. And then what happens when I open up the aperture to the entire 360-degree telescope?
Yep.
Because what happens is when you point that telescope, you see a specific star, say the North Star, and you see it very clearly, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as you open the aperture, all of a sudden, you see a Milky Way. You see constellations. And this really, you begin to understand that in the world of solving problems, you want to have the widest aperture possible and that that is manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these are actually, you know, as I listen to this, being, you know, someone who studies and works in the realm of enlightenment, and I know that these principles are basic. These are enlightenment principles. These are principles about, you know, if you can get up above it, you know, you can see a whole lot more from the helicopter than you can, you know, thrashing away in the midst of the forest. You get a perspective that is that brings, you know, inspiration. You know, that brings the creativity,
and
that brings these new ingredients into sight.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, to build on that idea, you know, a lot of times we equate, you know, enlightenment to a search and a journey. But at the end of the day, it's a willingness. It's a trust. It's a burning need that exceeds any and all of our fears and anxieties about whatever, about the reveal, about having to make changes, et cetera. So I think, consistent with your message, it's really all about being willing to trust the system. And what the system is very simple, the swirling information around that's just waiting on you to notice the right connections.
Yes, and it's all very practical.
Cool.
You know, this stuff works in everyday life, in everyday situations. And it isn't esoteric and something that's removed from, you know, how we live our lives and if we live them in a way that we like or we don't like, or systems that feel supportive and gratifying, or systems that feel grinding and painful.
Exactly.
Yeah. 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 This is cool stuff.
Thank you.
Your other books, too, I mean, as we're talking about these bigger principles, you know, I don't know, I've read, you know, along with you over the years, and you know, this book is an interesting, you know, application. As you say, you've been working on this one for 15 years, sort of behind the scenes, collecting data. There's a lot of rich material, and, you know, it's a developmental product that you produce in Deal Storming, and in a lot of your other books, it's kind of interesting because I can sort of see where the development of you as a person from your very roots, from, you know, the beginning of Love is a Killer App, which was sort of, you know, wow, what do you mean love in the business world? I'm sure your publisher had a few, you know, sleepless nights over that one. And
I was early. I was very early. I mean, now they don't have a problem. They publish books like Hug Your Customer by Jack Nick Mitchell, and Love Marks by Kevin Grant, and then Adam Grant's new book, You Give and Take. I mean, it's more of a common idea now. But, yeah, back then they wanted to change it to, you know, Caring is the Business Plan, or something that sounded a whole lot less bizarre and threatening. You know what I mean? So,
You were the first love cat, and that, you know, that takes some courage. And, you know, in this world, and I think that, you know, as I read your books and I've read the principles from which, you know, you've come, and all of us, you know, have had, as you describe in some of your books, you know, your years where you felt you were making forward motion, and other, your sideways years. And, you know, isn't it our sideways years, really, and our sideways times in business or whatever in our career, that open up oftentimes the opportunity for the inspiration and the aha?
Absolutely, because, you know, in those sideways years, there's some bonk point yep. where you know you're moving sideways, mm-hmm. you realize that at some point sideways becomes down, and at some point
yep.
downward becomes a spiral, and there's a moment you want to save yourself, and it is in that moment
yeah.
of recognition of one's direction that we pursue enlightenment. And I was just giving a talk to a company just the other day in South Texas, and it was a success conference, and I just had to tell them that in my experience, success is not a destination, because you'll never get there. You know, what I'd learned, and I wrote about this in Today We Are Rich, success is a direction, and the direction is forward. And to the extent
right.
we move forward, we are successful, because who says whatever goals we've picked are actually success goals? I learned in life that all deadlines, all quotas, and all goals are all made up by adults.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we play. That's how we play like kids. We make these things up. And some of us have better math than others, but at the end of the day, all that stuff's made up, but what is not made up is one's personal barometer.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And their
yeah.
sense of strength and pressure and power, and most importantly, which direction they're moving, that compass
yes.
of success and significance. So.
Right.
Well, I know that in,
right.
you know, in your life, you had a very important compass that, you know, helped you to, you know, set your north, south, east, and west pretty clearly when you were little, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, as a little kid, my grandmother Billy raised me. Billy King took me in when I was 4 years old, almost five, and she had been through so much in her life. She knew that a kid like me needed a lot of coaching because I was going to feel separation anxiety. I ended up being a special education student, so she knew I was going to get picked on a lot by the kids. And she had lived through the Great Depression and seen an entire generation bounce back because of the works of people like Robert Allen, As a Man Thinketh, and Norman Vincent Peale, Power of Positive Thinking, Dale Carnegie's book that was published in 1928, and
wow.
Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, which was published in 1932. So
yeah.
she pretty much put me on this plan, and the plan was very simple, positive thinking and confident living through conscious lifestyle design. So she never, ever told me to think positive. I knew that was not possible. You cannot will yourself to achieve a certain level of consciousness or a feeling. It's like losing weight. Eat less, move around, right? And so for positive thinking, it was similar. Feed your mind good stuff. Give to be rich. If you do those two things, you end up having a better viewpoint about yourself and the world, and you end up moving forward. And that was the... you know, a synopsis plan, but that's the simplicity of what she taught me.
Well,
yeah.
absolutely, and you've applied it each and every step of the way, and the fact is that what she taught you applies to every business out there. I mean,
right.
you know, what is a business except, you know, a group of individuals? And
right.
every individual has a history, and every individual, you know, hurts in some of the same ways, and you know, we all bleed red, I say, you know, so pain,
yeah,
pain
yeah, exactly.
and we all understand, we all have some common elements that we can relate to, and while our stories may be different, like you said, you know, eat less and move around. I mean, it really, while some of it's hard to do, it's simple. It's beautifully simple. It's brilliantly
right.
simple.
And I think
yeah.
that, you know, for leaders that are listening, if you lead a business, if you lead a whatever, Napoleon once said that the leader's role is to define reality and then
mm-hmm.
give hope.
Right.
And that is a real balancing act, but it's important for your followers, the people that are in your tribe, because if you ever go too far in one direction, too much reality, you suck the life out of two people. If you ever go too far on hope, you've lost confidence, because really what you're doing is just window dressing to kind of like make everybody feel better. So I believe that emotional or psychological or spiritual balance is the essence of being
yeah.
an effective leader.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very cool. Kim, I've got a question I want to ask you, because I think that your answer to this, and I'm switching gears a bit, but I think this is so germane to some of the challenges that a number of our listeners have. So, you know, we know that you were the former chief solutions officer for Yahoo, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you have this very, very rich business and very, very rich technology background. And Victoria and I have spent a lot of time on our show talking about millennials. In fact, in our last couple of shows, we talked about, we love the fact that millennials get this transparency, this, you know, I'm an open book. They're very collaborative. But here's my question. I watched a keynote or listened to a keynote that you did. It's on YouTube. And I believe mm-hmm. it was a keynote talking about Today We Are Rich with one of your mm-hmm. clients. And you talked about the fact that, you know, we need to be better at email. Sometimes you pick up the phone instead of emailing. And if it's going back and forth, two and three emails, it's too many. But how do we get our millennials to understand the importance of doing what we're doing today, having a conversation? Because I think they spend way too much time texting, way too much time in this one-dimensional technology atmosphere. And I'm wondering from your perspective, because, you know, you came from that world, how do we get them to be better players in business so that maybe they'll stay longer too, right?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, with millennials, you know, sometimes really the question isn't how do we get them off devices, because wow, is that a slog, right?
Yeah.
I think that sometimes the secret is to make them better at using digital devices to communicate with each other. So I've seen organizations that say, you know, the trick for us is to graduate people from text to FaceTime or Skype video. So at the very least, they're still doing real-time face-to-face-based communication. And kids can be coached into that. And when they try it once, they realize, wow, you know, a video FaceTime really does accomplish a lot more. And it's very interesting.
Yeah. That's excellent.
It gets to the whole core of the concept of what I call intimacy. I mean, because we're having a conversation right now about intimacy,
right,
and sort of
right,
intimacy illiteracy.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
In the high-tech world, right?
Right, right. And that's exactly what's going on. And years ago, this was back in 2004, I worked with a group called HeartMath, who does a lot of work around business-related stress. Really, really interesting organization. You should look up the HeartMath Institute. And what we studied was a theory based on what I had experienced at Yahoo and many of our partners. And it was this: people are so addicted to being online all the time. We are experiencing information overload. We open ourselves up to constant interruption. This is back in 2004, by the way, pre-social. Constant interruption, and our FaceTime with other people is declining rapidly as we substitute digital for the real. And they did a study of over 3,000 people, and we confirmed there was a statistically significant correlation between what we called NEDS, New Economy Depression Syndrome, and being online 5 hours a day, constantly interrupted 2.5 times an hour, and having a 30% decrease in FaceTime from the previous year. And when we dug into it, we even found research at Chiba University, Tokyo, Japan, that equated it as the number one cause of business-related depression, or what the Department of Labor calls workplace depression, which at the time cost the U.S. economy $45 billion in productivity. So when we went to the market, you can imagine, I was on CNN and other places, you know, at first, people really want to fight you on this and say, you know, that's just not true. I mean, I'm online all the time. I'm not depressed. But then they begin to kind of look into the mirror and say, well, what is depression? And it was interesting. Bruce Cryer from HeartMath kind of coached me on understanding not chemical depression or chemically based depression, but lifestyle based depression. And he said, basically, you know, depression is a set of negative thoughts and feelings that occur like sparks when your shock absorbers are worn thin and you're literally, you can no longer take these pressures, these triggers. And that depression is literally a metal on metal experience. That was really interesting to me.
Yeah. That is very interesting.
It's also insidious. As a mental health person, I can say that, you know, when people say, well, I'm not depressed, the interesting thing is that depression has many cloaks. And the interesting thing, too, is that, you know, the chemical imbalance is actually created by the lifestyle changes. and
of course it is.
The
absolutely.
Decrease. Yeah, so you can change your biochemistry one way or the other.
Yeah,
well,
it reminds me of the Deepak Chopra, you know, statement, which I believe in, that is where a thought goes, a chemical follows.
Yes.
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 And Tim,
yes.
Don't you think, I mean, you're using the term workplace depression, but really, isn't that a testament to the disappointingly low levels of engagement that we have right now in companies?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that we foster a remote working 24/7, always on, mobile,
yeah.
social, global environment that leads to this.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you pointed out a company that actually tells people, hey, we're not going to text or email or send communication after 5 o'clock on Friday, and we're not doing it on the weekend. And, oh, by the way, if somebody's on vacation, that's sacred time. That was amazing.
They must be in the best
yeah.
place to work list. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know,
yeah.
SAS Institute is that company. And
uh-huh.
SAS Institute was founded by Dr. Jim Goodnight, who studied the agricultural sciences and statistics at North Carolina State. And he figured out, you know, how to use statistical analysis to improve crop production, for example. And he was going to go to work for IBM. This is way, way back before he founded SAS Institute. And he went in his first day to interview, and he said he saw hamsters on a wheel and slouchbacks with their briefcases. And he was like, wow, I don't want to live that way. We can do better. So he got together a couple of co-founders, and they created a company around the idea that we're going to create an employership brand based on a superior working lifestyle. We're going to help people get off the treadmill. We're going to provide them health care on site, not insurance, health care on site from
mm-hmm.
the first day they work for us.
Wow.
We're going to feed them every day. Their family can come in and get fed. We're going to bring in fresh fruit on Wednesday, fresh flowers on Thursday. We're going to have an artist in residence.
Oh.
We're going to skylight most of the places and move people around so you don't ever work in the dark more than 90 days. I could keep going. But what happened was that Goodnight took a design-oriented approach to
yeah.
creating a company with the human experience at the center of design, because as Steve Jobs liked to say, design is the constant act of problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the results. SAS has almost no turnover, okay? They have 200 applications for every open job, but the awards, if you Google SAS Institute Fortune 100 Best Companies to Work For, you'll see that every year they're top 10. And they've
wow.
been number one several times. And they are the best ranked company in the world over the last 20 years by this index, and it all comes back to that leader's vision that I'm going to trust that if I do right by my people,
yeah.
my people will pay it forward by doing it right by our clients. The SAS Institute is still private, and they're
wow.
profitable, and they make
amazing.
A superior product than their competitors, so it's a really good story.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That is
and Victoria,
amazing.
I cannot believe that the half hour is almost upon us. Can you believe this?
I know. I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, we could talk to you for another hour, my friend.
We could. But we do want to tell everyone out there, please, take a look at Tim's books, particularly take a look at Deal Storming. And if you're, you know, B2B, if you're doing sales, if you're at all interested in any kind of, you know, important shift within your team that brings people together and puts them, surprise, surprise, on the same team. What a novel idea. But we hope that Tim will, you know, come back and see us someday, because this is just really exciting, and we're so honored to, you know, have you on the show, Tim, at your, the launch of your book. We wish you all great things with Deal Storming.
Well, thank you. And I want to tell
yeah.
people that if you're interested in getting a copy of Deal Storming, just go to timsanders.com/DS, as in Deal Storm. So timsanders.com/D. And you can buy the book. You can get a bonus where I give you 120 minutes of video training when you buy the book.
Wow.
And if you're on
cool.
the fence about the whole thing, just scroll down a little bit and you'll see where we give you a free chapter 3, Sales Genius is a Team Sport. And that'll really help you understand what the book's all about.
That's an awesome chapter, yeah.
That
yeah,
is.
With a great, great
Thank
example
you.
Of what Deal Storming does. Tim, we are so grateful that you are the love cat that you are and came to visit us today and share your wisdom and your knowledge with our audience. And, again, we are going to stay closely tuned to what you're up to, and we you know, again, hope that everyone out there gets a chance to, you know, get some of your books in their hands, because you are a wonderful teacher and a great inspiration to me. And
absolutely.
I know that you will be to everyone out there who may not know
you
now, but will know you in a minute here in terms of this new book and all of your works.
Oh, yeah.
So good luck with your tour and your whirlwind speaking engagements. And what we're going to do, you mentioned something a minute ago, our next show is actually going to be on ego states. And this is going to be fun, because we're going to talk about you know, kind of how sometimes you bring your little kid and your teenager and your briefcase to work with you, and sometimes your whole family. So,
and mom and dad.
We're going to be getting into some real juicy stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm sure that's happened
absolutely
to everybody. Yeah.
That's
so, Tim,
cool.
Great luck with your book. And,
yes,
you know,
congratulations.
Hopefully you'll come back and see us sometime. Yeah.
I will.
Love
thank
to
you
have
guys.
You on the show.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you guys. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Have fun.
Uh-huh.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, everyone. So we are going to be bringing some ego state stuff to you in our March shows, which you are going to love. This is a whole different angle on things, and we're going to have some fun putting that together with you, for you. And Tim's just isn't Tim great? I just love talking to him. Don't you, Mary? Yeah.
How gracious! Yeah. What a wonderful person he really is.
Yeah, he's
the epitome
the real deal
of what he writes about. He really is.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, when you walk your talk, it shows. And,
absolutely.
We want to leave you guys with that, because these things are not just important to talk about. They're important to live. And we know, you know, y'all work somewhere, and it's important to bring these to where you live in your work a day. And, you know, start to bring some of these ideas out, talk about them, read about them. Have a book group, you know, maybe get a small group of radicals together and read the book on your lunch hour and bring these dissident ideas into your work team. So, and Mary and I are going to be cooking up some interesting things coming up too. So Mary, you and I will probably hopefully offer some things here in the world that will help people to bring these ideas into the workplace too. So
absolutely.
With that, go ahead, Mary. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I hope everybody has a great week and a good couple of weeks until we get back together again.
Absolutely. And you still have about another week left in Love Month. So, you know, be a love cat out there and practice it all month. And then you can, you know, bring that energy into the rest of the year. And we will see you on, what's our next show date, Mary?
I think it's the 15th of March.
Okay, so we're going to have a little bit of a hiatus here while we whip up some wonderful ego state stuff for you guys. And you have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you again in March. Take care. Take care, Mary.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.